Paradise by Numbers by S.A. Finlay. How could a man not be beguiled by the gentle shush-shushing of the petite siren waves on a sultry day on the shore of a volcanic black sandy beach in St. Lucia an hour before sunset? His feet standing so close to the equator at the center of everything. His legs tanned, his torso so muscled at 50-ish. His bespoke silk trunks hollering, pineapples and palm trees galore. Bronzed neat-haired chest stuck out to welcome the heat, arms folded across as he dipped manicured toes in and out of the warm water. His straw-hatted head of glossy brown hair bent to peer for tropical fish beneath the surface, and a rose-coloured paper-parasoled rum cocktail screwed carefully into the sand a metre away. Steel drums panning reggae behind. A blind date in paradise. Guaranteed outcomes. What was not to smile at? And yet George frowned. He checked his phone. Not for the time, to see if he'd got sand in it. Not his best idea bringing it to the beach, even if it was waterproof. And it made the pocket of his trunks sag a bit, which he didn't imagine to be alluring to an approaching, prefabricated, meticulously planned love story. Truthfully, he knew what time it was. The sun set early in this Eden. The crickets, locusts, and tree frogs chittered on palms and walls, as chameleons shuttled across hot stones. The sky would darken in the blink of an eye, and George's eyes tended to blink a bit often and a bit fast. She was due to meet him at the shoreline at 5 o'clock. It was 5 minutes past. He didn't mind. He viewed the lateness as fashionable and useful. Might ponder his future a while, even if 5 minutes wasn't a lot. Ezgi, that was her name. He remembered just as she snuck up on the crunchless sand, sashayed into view, tropical sarong billowing in the warm, slight breeze that blew her long, long legs into full sight. Scarlet varnished toenails glinted maybe a bit menacingly at him. Her hair, all that glossy dark hair swaying about sculptured shoulders, huge brown eyes smiling, delicate bangled arms reaching out. A string bag in the crook of one, a neat bikini-topped décolletage stuck out invitingly, like the deal of the day on a local market stall. All vanilla and cinnamon and exotic spices. She was shaking him by the hand, flinging herself about him in a vast expectant hug. She bashed him with the bag. Et in Arcadia ego, he muttered, returning the embrace a bit awkwardly. She was nearly as tall as he was. Eh? She said gaily. Nothing, he replied. How lovely to meet you. How was your flight? Are you settled?
Oh yes, I slept and dreamt. The engagement suite is gorgeous, all flowers and fruit. Though I heard something scuttle, I don't much like the creepy crawlies.
Oh dear, said George, a bit stuck for words. Even if he'd practiced vacuous romantic chat in front of the mirror, he'd also tried hugging with a pillow. Well, I guess there are a lot of tropical scuttlers hereabouts. He sank his feet further into the sand, leant over to get his cocktail, and slurped it through a candy-striped straw. The paper parasol twirled about and caught him on the nose. Ouch. Oh dear, my parasol is scuttling a bit now. Do you have a drink?
I fear so, it's all so kind of you. Do we get guests?
No, I don't drink. We don't drink, she said, a look of tut-tutting, and you failed to memorize the spec. All over her gorgeous face. I think they rent a crowd for us, he said matter-of-factly. Did you not know this already? The exquisite detail of it all?
Rent? Ugh,
she exclaimed. She reached in her bag for a bottle of water and sipped it. She pulled out her mobile phone.
Do you mind if I report my successful rendezvous to the agency?
Good idea. Not at all. I'll do the same, said George. It's our rendezvous, after all, he added, attempting a small amendment of perception and emphasis, betraying a tendency to remind and correct, or a desire to be assertive. They stood there, side by side, heads down, eyes averted from the beautiful private view of sun and sky meeting sea. She couldn't help it. She had to tell my friends I'm here, and take a selfie. She didn't invite him to feature in it, so he decided to be at one with her, and affect to text someone, anyone really, simultaneously. A few minutes passed. George sipped his drink and waited.
Well, it's all just perfect, she said, when she'd finished. You look quite manageable. What odd eyes you have. I'm off for a swim in the pool. Shall I see you later for dinner? Sun sets ever so soon, and I don't much like the dark. Yes, yes, of course. I think I'm quite manageable. Do have a swim. I don't much go in for pools, as you know. What time would you like to eat? Between 7 and 8, you said. I think 8 would be perfect. I could rarefy myself for you. We've done so much together already, after all. She winked. George blushed. No, they hadn't really. It had all been games, online. Clever enough. He ought to know. You're already as rare as clean water, he said. Bingo, his first chivalrous compliment. And he felt quite the besotted bridegroom, like a true potential lifelong lover and soulmate ought to feel. She said. A look of doubt crossed over her face. Her mouth grinned white teeth, her eyes were vacant. He blinked furiously, tried again. My blue diamond. Oh dear, she muttered. All mined out, don't you know? Never mind. I'm off. See you at 8. She swished away. George didn't know what to do with his 3 hours. He watched the sun go down, although the sun didn't really perform that whole visibly setting like jelly thing hereabouts. It didn't sink and squish and demise in a glorious created time-lapse riot of blood oranges. It just switched itself off. It was a blink-and-you'll-miss-it affair. And of course, George blinked rather a lot, even when wearing sunglasses. When it was dark, he tiptoed to the poolside bar, listened to the steel drums a while, scanned the plashing water for his fiancée. He heard the giggling and gurgling and chittering of moneyed Americans, Brits, Chinese, a few Europeans. He downed his drink, went to his groom's suite, and lay down. He tried to banish thoughts of Sally. They had a habit of creeping up and scuttling in on him, skin-shedding, shape-shifting chameleons. There they were before you spotted them, fleeting. Well, she was long gone. He recognized the scintillating memories simply for what they were, anticipation and valediction, and fear, all perfectly natural. He felt a bit sick, not to worry. The agency had told him to expect it, and Ezgi had been warned. Ezgi also knew that his fantasies tended to go awry, abstracted and disinterested. She'd insisted she wasn't bothered so long as she got a husband, baby, and citizenship. That was the quid pro quo. A carefully pre-selected gene pooling. A result, and a happy ever after. Ideal circumstances in geography. A laid-back reggae and rum-fueled, moderate to ensure procreation. Shangri-La. At a menu prefix. Now that he thought about it, Ezgi didn't seem at all prenuptially jittery. Why should he be? They were the foolproof match, after all. There were some half-dozen other couples at dinner. George sidled in, tugging at the itchy collar of his shirt. A waiter leapt out, escorted him to his sea-view corner seat, beeswax candle-lit table. George scanned the room. All the tables had sea-views, and all had candles. He sat down, an ice bucket with a bottle of champagne smooth-landed in front of him. A napkin glided into his lap. A flute filled with fizz nudged into his open hand. Smiles and winks and nods and efficiency. He knocked back the first glass and waited for Ezgi. In she floated, that hair swinging about, a silver purse glinting in her hands. A beaded maxi dress slit up the side to within a centimetre of an invisible nickel line. He wondered if she wore underwear. He wouldn't blame her if she didn't. Even with the aircon, it was too hot, and he suddenly suffered the claustrophobia and surfacing sweat of the overdressed at an opera. Oh, I do love a man who dresses properly, she said, planting a kiss on his forehead as she flounced into her chair, fluttered her napkin about, waved the glass of champagne away and reached for the jug of water.
He felt like her grandfather. She was younger.
40-ish, he supposed. One wasn't permitted to know these days.
Fair enough. They ordered agency-recommended seafood, followed by more seafood, followed by fruits. George liked eating, and he found the emporium of cocktails on offer enormously colourful fun. He got stuck right in, rolled up his sleeves, and dived into the platters of shellfish and bream and bass, and slurped his drinks. Ezgi pulled a rictus of a grin, as if from a bag of tricks, picked at her food as delicately as she might, and watched George. Now and then she sighed as if to hint at some disapproval of his voracious appetite or abominable table manners. They ate mostly in silence. He munched away merrily, she sipped and forked the odd piece of fish without damaging her lipstick, until a lobster claw flew across the table and hit Ezgi in the eye. She looked up from her phone.
Ouch! Ouch! Fuck! Ouch!
A waiter zoomed in. George dropped his lobster and leant across to her, handing her his seafood-grimed napkin. The candle guttered and died.
Good grief, I'm so sorry. I got a bit overexcited. Are you okay? Does it hurt?
Well, of course it does, you idiot. My eye won't stop watering. What happens if I have a scratched cornea?
George leant back, thought a moment, and offered, I don't think it'd affect the looks of our son. Then he added by way of suddenly remembered apology, nor yours, I imagine. The waiters retreated as if fleeing a front line.
Well, that's a fucking relief on both counts then, his fiancée replied.
The other diners swiveled their heads in dismay, set to messaging their complaints to the agency. Not good enough. Profanities in our promised paradise. Beautiful wedding eaves trashed. Thousands of miles away, compensation computations started grinding out, all but audible as the steel drums rolled out a discreet lament.
Have you finally finished eating? Ezgi said, a hand over her eye. You need to take me to the sanatorium right now. I should only be going there to confirm I'm pregnant. I'm so angry.
Right, of course. I'll just finish this lobster, said George.
You will do no such fucking thing.
Ezgi stood up, towered over him, wailed, caught the tablecloth, pulled it from under him. Plates and glasses crashed everywhere. Waiters dashed in, diners dropped their smartphones and stood up to get a better view.
Right then, said George, staring at the mess of his dinner suit. Let's go, my darling.
He went around the table, took her by the shoulders, picked up her bag and phone, ushered her swiftly out, held her to him as he marched her carefully up the solar-lighted path around the corner, up another path behind the bridal bungalows towards the neon-lit sanatorium.
George, how nice to see you, said the friendly doctor of similar height, looks and age as they entered the pre-treatment room.
Tom, fancy seeing you here, said George, a bit sheepishly. This is where you ended up, he added, and as if prompted, shot an arm up protectively around Ezgi.
You know each other? Wailed Ezgi.
Yes, yes, from way back. His ex and I were colleagues, said Tom. Now let's get you sorted. Sit down, there's a girl, and let me take a look at that eye.
George and Tom shook hands on the sanatorium veranda, agreed to keep in touch, exchanged contacts. Tom winked at George, said things like he was happy and relieved for him, wished conjugal felicitations, looked forward to seeing them again in the blink of any eye. Ho, 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 the sort of banter that Ezgi didn't seem to hear, understand, or want to attempt, as she stomped impatiently from one bejeweled foot to the other, and looked on with one unbandaged eye. After George had seen Ezgi to the porch of her suite, offered to come in and tuck her up and tend to her, rebutted with an almighty huff and slap across the face and a see you tomorrow then, with my now one good eye, he beat a retreat to his room. He lay down on his vast bed in his dirty suit. He slept long and deeply and dreamlessly. Sally didn't come to haunt him in the night. He awoke refreshed, if smelly, and ready for what was to come. At sunrise, the happy couple stood together under the festooned wedding gazebo,
Esgi wore a diaphanous floating maxi dress, her hair up, a white orchid clipped into one side, one eye made up, the other patched in yellow silk that flaunted her flawless complexion. George wore a cream linen suit, a pink silk shirt, undone at the collar. His unsocked feet in new navy blue boat shoes. Behind them, seated in teak steamer chairs, the diners from last night, the waiters, the matchmaking managers and staff. Further back, the steel drummers at the ready. In front of all, right where sand touched sea, a barefooted canute in a frothy long silk coat, the celebrant of indeterminate gender, raised its arms, palms up, to a signal of beginning. The drums hummed. The crowd sighed and hushed themselves. A minute-long ceremony to establish a lifetime of mutuality and trust and general gorgeousness. Here we all are. Listen to the endless turquoise sea, feel the sun beating gently on your necks, and the hot black sand in your toes. Touch the sultry air with your fingers, watch the infinite blue sky, smell the blossoms, hear the cicadas, taste the salt in the wafting breeze, merge the endless possibilities of your senses and minds. Join these two in harmony, and take your pictures. Here we go. 3, 2, 1, done. Smartphones turned towards the couple, or back to themselves, glinted in some ecstatic unison. "Are we married? Is that it?" said George.
"Didn't you read the bloody spec?" hissed Esky.
The crowd dissolved. The chairs disappeared. The drums silenced. The celebrant tiptoed off. They stood there a moment, the two perfect newlyweds. Esky sighed, pulled out her phone, messaged her incalculable number of friends.
"I think I'll go for a swim. Your doctor friend said I could if I kept my head above water."
"Of course," said George amiably. "Always keep your head above water. Would you like a kiss?"
"I don't think so. Let's do all that later, shall we?"
"It's all guaranteed, after all," Esgi said pleasantly enough now, a flirtatious jutting of the hip. A newlywed sort of grin across her pretty face. A merry, promising glint in her chocolate brown eyes, or one of them anyway. She pranced off, waving.
"See you at 11 sharp in the suite."
George sat down on the hot black volcanic sand, removed his boat shoes, shuffled on his bottom to the shoreline, let the water lap over his toes. Shush, shush, his beleaguered heart. Attempted to imagine himself beguiled and convinced. He scanned the heavenly horizon. He closed his eyes, and he thought of Sally.